Here's Mark 13, 1 to 19. As Jesus came out of the temple, one of the disciples said, "Look, teacher, what large stones and what large buildings." Then Jesus asked him, "Do you see these great buildings? Not one stone will be left here upon another. All will be thrown down." When he was sitting on the Mount of Olives opposite the temple, Peter, James, John, and Andrew asked him privately, "Tell us, when will this be, and what will be the sign that all these things are about to be accomplished?" Then Jesus began to say to them, "Beware that no one leads you astray. Many will come in my name and say, 'I am the one,' and they will lead many astray. When you hear of wars and rumors of wars, do not be alarmed. This must take place, but the end is still to come. For nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be earthquakes in various places. There will be famines. This is but the beginning of the birth pangs. As for yourselves, beware, for they will hand you over to the councils, and you will be beaten in synagogues, and you will stand before governors and kings because of me, as a testimony to them. And the good news must first be proclaimed to all nations. When they bring you to trial and hand you over, do not worry beforehand about what you are to say, but say whatever is given to you at the time, for it is not you who speak, but the Holy Spirit. Sisters and brothers will betray each other, and parents will betray their own children, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all because of my name. But the one who endures to the end will be saved." You're on mute, Rod.
Apologies. would anyone like to have a little read of the Matthew passage, or do we want just to make Annika do it? Sounds like they want you to do it, Annika. So I'll just put that one in.
I'm happy to do it if Annika wants to read it.
Oh, thanks, Jeanette.
I've just got to find the passage.
No, it's all right. I'll put it in the chat if you just want to read it there.
I'm not seeing it.
Oh, that's because I haven't. Oh, yeah, I have.
Just if you give me the verse, I'll find
it. Okay. As long as you can make it inclusive on the fly, that's fine. Matthew 6, 25 to 34.
25 to 34. Okay, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your... Oh, no, that's the wrong one. Sorry.
No, that's right. That's right.
Let me try again. I'm looking it up on the Bible app and somehow I missed 26, did you say?
No, 25 to 34, so you're right. Yeah.
25. Matthew 6, 25 to... Oh, so I was right. Sorry. Apologies, everyone.
That's fine.
But I do this nice and smoothly. Therefore, I say to everyone, do not worry. Do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear?
Great. Thank you. I'll just do 32. So 32. Those without faith run after all these things, and indeed your Abba God knows that you need all these things, but strive first for the kingdom of God, God's righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. So do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today. That verse in particular really struck me. Yeah. Mm. Don't worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. but today's trouble is enough for today. So as if you got the weekly note, you will notice that you will have seen that, you know, the heading for this week was "The End is Nigh, Don't Panic." And I think that kind of paradox is in these two passages, which is why I chose them. So I'll obviously talk a little bit more about that and my choosing of those passages and why I chose them and where the title comes from. But before I do that, as always, just an opportunity for people to say anything that they noticed, anything that they wondered, anything that stood out about these passages, both the individual passages or the way that they contrast with each other, the way they stand next to each other.
I thought the first passage was talking about the stones being cast down. A parallel would have been somebody prophesying about 9/11, to put it in a modern age.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And as you know, it's a similar event in some ways. You know, this is about the destruction of the temple and the destruction of Jerusalem, and you know, the Romans attacking the very heart of Israel. So it is a kind of seismic event in the same way, except it's sort of in reverse, that with the sacking of Jerusalem, it's an empire destroying the holy places of a small nation. So it's more, perhaps a drone strike is more the parallel to this than the vulnerable trying to strike back at the empire. That's more of a Star Wars moment, I guess. Any other things that struck you in these passages?
Yeah, that the second passage, the one, you know, sort of talking about tomorrow's got enough trouble of its own, just reminds me a bit of that John O'Donohue poem, like for those who are exhausted, about, yeah, it just seems like advice for people who are just, who just have enough, who are just at the end of themselves, and thinking about, you know, again, the context of Jesus talking to subsistence peasant farmers who are being overtaxed by the Roman Empire and, you know, losing their land, and the kind of betrayal of the collaboration of, you know, their own people who are administering the taxes, and this is the kind of desperation of it, and the kind of just the, I guess, the kindness and the comfort of just going like, don't think too far ahead, like you've got enough, like yeah, it's almost like for Jesus this kind of very minute pastoral moment of just recognizing a people who are just at the end of themselves. Yeah.
Mm.
It's just such a depth of kindness in it. Mm.
It occurs to me that it's actually a really radical way of thinking, because we've got a tendency to think that if we can plan ahead and we can solve all the problems that might arise, we're actually going to save ourselves a lot of grief. And yet Jesus there is really talking about being mindfully in the present and fully appreciating the present regardless of what might happen in the future. Mm. And that distinguishing between feeling like we've got to solve every problem that might come up versus, hey, let's just deal with what we've got to deal with now, and then whatever does come up, we'll deal with just what does come up.
Mm. Yeah, certainly this kind of paradoxical, or the kind of how we hold together the future and the present, and how we live in the future in light, how we live in the present in light of the future. It feels like Jesus is dealing with those things, and that's why I chose these two. There's a kind of strange alchemy that Jesus is performing here to, in terms of future and present, which is intriguing. Yeah, thanks, Jenny. Anything else before There's not that many of us this morning, so I will launch into my bit, but feel free just to jump in, interrupt me, make comments as we go, because it's a bit crazy to have an uninterrupted monologue when there are just so few of us. So feel free to interrupt if you have thoughts as we go. But thank you for those thoughts. So where am I? I need to go back to the beginning. Yeah, so just a quick reminder that we're in the Advent season, and we're asking ourselves about the incarnation, the coming of Jesus, and thinking of ways in which it is good news for us today. And these passages, particularly the first one, might seem very odd choices if we wanted to focus on Jesus as good news. Choosing an apocalyptic passage on the coming destruction of the temple in Jerusalem and the scattering of the Jewish people doesn't seem like good news. But I guess today, and inspired by some things that I've been listening to and reading in the last few weeks, I want to explore how even this passage might be good news for us. As I suggested in that weekly note and in previous weeks, one of the things that I wanted to look at in this series was climate change anxiety, which is such a big thing for me, and I know for a lot of us. And so choosing a passage where Jesus talks about kind of a coming disaster, a future time when the end of the world seems to be upon us, it just seems appropriate for us in the world that we inhabit, because as with the Jews in Jesus' time, we look ahead and we see a coming potential for disaster and destruction and for the scattering of people. And for a lot of us, it creates a lot of anxiety. And so I wanted to look at these passages and think about what Jesus would say to us in that experience of anxiety, how Jesus would help us to respond to or to manage that anxiety, to respond to and to manage that coming, the coming disaster, the coming threats, the future threats. And I guess I was a bit inspired by a couple of things. One was a climate emergency episode of the Nomad podcast, which I'd really recommend listening to. I was tempted not to listen to it when I saw it come up in the Nomad feed because, avoiding reading and listening to too much on climate change has been one of my coping strategies with my climate change anxiety. But I'm glad that I did, because there was much in it that was really helpful, and I'd really recommend listening to it as well. But one thing really stood out for me, and that was a section around the kind of 50-minute mark where Rowan Williams, who was the former Archbishop of Canterbury and an amazing theologian, was talking about Jesus' ministry and talking about two things that Jesus said simultaneously, and those are the things that we see in these passages. So he said that the first thing that Jesus regularly said was that there was a great crisis coming, the destruction of the temple, and that everything would be turned upside down, and that Jesus was saying to people that things are serious, and that that they shouldn't kid themselves that things weren't serious, that there wasn't a crisis coming. But the second thing that Rowan Williams said that Jesus repeatedly said to people was that they should stand firm and be confident that they are loved and worthwhile, and seek to share that reconciliation with others. That they stood in an environment of blessing and grace at all times, and that they should be offering grace and love and reconciliation to others. And on the surface of it, the combination of these two messages seems to make no psychological sense. It seems like Jesus is kind of stoking anxiety on the one hand and then telling people not to feel anxious on the other. It seems like a bit of gaslighting. But for Rowan Williams and for Rob Bell, who I'll refer to later, his Introduction to Joy talk, which I also listened to in the last couple of weeks and which I found really helpful in this regard. For both of them, for Rowan and Rob, holding these things in tension, these two realities, is actually the best and really the only way to live in this incarnated life of ours. Because the fact of the matter is that for all of us, the end is always nigh. The destruction of Jerusalem and the temple and the coming climate crisis is, I guess, just a collective version of what is true for all of us as individuals all the time. Because all of us will die. All of us will see loved ones die. All of us will experience sudden and catastrophic change, often many times in our lives, because that is what it is to be human. And so what Jesus describes in Mark 13 is just a mythic, apocalyptic version of what is just the universal, mundane, human experience, that every day there are tragedies unfolding around us, even if we're not aware of them. There's this amazing painting, which I'll just show you, called The Fall of Icarus by Bruegel. Hopefully you can see it there. And I think I've actually shared this before in another context, but you've got all these people going about their business, a man ploughing a field and then a shepherd looking after sheep with the dogs and someone fishing. And then over just in front of the boat, you can see the legs of Icarus as he plunges into the ocean, having fallen from the sky because the sun melted his wings. And it's such a beautiful illustration of everyday tragedy, the way we're going about our lives, walking down the street, and the person walking past us may well have just gone through something as catastrophic, as disorientating as climate change, as the destruction of a city. It's just that we don't know it. So the basic message is, if whether it's the collapse of human civilization or it's just being randomly knocked over by an ice cream van on the way to the shops, tragedy lies ahead of us all. Can you close that, Kitty? Tragedy lies ahead of us all in one form or another. So the question for us, the question that Jesus, I guess, is posing with that first passage is, what do we do about it? And I think the answer, as Jesus intuits and as people like Brené Brown would confirm, is that pretending that this is not the case, pretending that life is not fragile, pretending that that tragedy might be, is not around the corner, is not the path to psychological health, and it's not the path to flourishing. To pretend we are immortal and invulnerable, to deny future reality, to deny the fragility of being creatures of flesh. This is not the path to flourishing, because it does one of two things. It either drives our anxiety underground and turns it into this monster which will end up consuming us. Or it just means that we are completely unprepared for when disaster strikes. So what we need to do, what Jesus would say we need to do, is to look squarely into the face of our future, of our vulnerability, of the potential for everything to be taken away in an instant, to look it squarely in the face, and to experience healthy grief rather than cultivating despair or denial. Rowan Williams talks about the future as it's like a tapestry with multiple strands. Yeah? It's not this monolithic black or white thing. It has multiple strands. Some of them are black. There is so much scope for grief as we look at the present and the future. You know, multiple forms of life that have been lost in the great extinction that we're going through. All the suffering that our inaction and action has created in the world around us. There is so much to grieve and so much loss, but there are other strands in the future as well. There are beautiful and positive strands as well. There are gifts that the future gives to us that we can live in the present. The way that climate change has woken us up to our dependence on other life forms, the way it's woken us up to our connection to other beings, to creativity and spirit, the way the need for simplicity has woken us up to the joy for simplicity and flowing and slowing down and staying put rather than moving around. So I think Jesus would say refusing to look squarely at the future in all its complexity doesn't change it. It just means that we are either overwhelmed by anxiety or in a dangerous form of denial. Whereas looking at it squarely offers us gifts. Because you notice that in the second passage, Jesus doesn't encourage us to ignore the future, to live in denial of the future, but he says to not worry about the future. His focus is anxiety, to not let it overwhelm us. This is a different thing entirely. So the second thing I briefly want to talk about is as I mentioned before, Rob Bell's Introduction to Joy, which is on YouTube if you want to have a look at it. And it's a 180-minute talk, I think, where he focuses on, I guess, the gifts of Ecclesiastes, and the fact that, again, in Ecclesiastes, you see the writer talking about how things can be taken away in the blink of an eye. And because of that, we need to find joy and meaning now. We need to live our lives now. We need to find joy in the mundane moments of life now, because what else can we do? Rob Bell tells a story of being at some meeting or reception for Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama back, 20 years ago in the States, and him being a young pastor and not knowing what to what to expect, how to greet these, these wise, kind of solemn men of wisdom. And as he stood in this hall and they both entered from either side of the room, he had no idea what to expect. And he stood back and watched them walk towards each other. And as they met in the middle of the room, they both started laughing uproariously, hugging each other and tickling each other. And he watched these grown men, these kind of icons of wisdom and of grace, kind of tickling each other in the middle of this room, and thought about all the things that they'd been through, the Dalai Lama had his land taken away from him, having been driven into exile. Desmond Tutu going through decades of apartheid and then being the chairperson of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and hearing countless stories of violence and tragedy and injustice, and yet having this capacity in the moment for such play and such joy. And for him, it just, these two men embodied this paradox that Jesus is talking about here, that that somehow in looking squarely at the reality of our fragile and tragic life, the life of vulnerability in being, in fleshed beings, somehow in sitting in the truth of that, there is a capacity to find and embrace joy in the present. So there's much more that we could talk about. I've got a couple of things to say briefly to bring us back to the incarnation at the end, but I did wonder if there were any thoughts, because, you know, we're dealing with this briefly, so we're skating over a lot of really huge topics and themes here, but were there any comments or reflections on any of that before we finish?
Hi, Rod.
Hey, Nate.
I've been thinking about the very same thing this week, but also kind of the practice that goes into finding that joy in the present. And I don't think that comes without practice or structure or like a skill set behind that. Like, I'm really interested in that, but also like you can't just click your fingers and switch on to, yeah, I think that's a real skill or art.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And again, I think both of those speakers sort of talk a bit about that. One thing that really struck me in the passage as a kind of maybe a gateway to one of those kinds of practices is the fact that in the second passage, Jesus on a number of occasions refers to kind of God in heaven. So this kind of orientation up to heaven. But then immediately after talking about God in heaven, he focuses on the details of the natural incarnated world around him. So look what your God in heaven does for these birds. Look what your God in heaven does for these flowers. So that dealing with the future by focusing on the incarnated details of what God presents to us in the flowers and the creatures and the people in front of us. And it's what Janet was saying before, I guess, that cultivating the practice of true presence and attention to what God has done. And one of the gifts, I think, of climate change is awakening us to the terrible dangers of our culture's disenchantment of the natural world and our inability to hear what the natural world has to say to us and what God wants to say to us through the natural world, through the created order. So that's just, I guess that's just one way of addressing exactly what you're talking about. That how do we cultivate practices that allow us to not be overwhelmed by anxiety, but to find joy in the present despite the fragility of life? And I think one of them is, you know, learning to be present and to pay attention to what God's created order wants to say to us.
And you sort of get the bit of a feeling about like a faith, hope type of streamy thing, like, you know, hope for the future and faith about believing things will be, you know, like God is present. And I feel like they're underlying these behind those passages.
Yeah. Well, definitely one of the things that Rowan Williams talks about is that, that difference between despair and grief, and that despair just sees the future as just kind of unrelentingly black, whereas grief is the flip side of hope, and that we experience grief because we have such hope for the future. And
good stuff here.
Sorry, what's that? Yeah. So I do think that there is hope woven through our grief, and so much of our sense of the sadness of climate change, et cetera, is because we have this incredible hope of what else is possible. Mm.
I'm reminded of something I saw earlier in the week. It was a show on TV and it had the Crusades. One character says to the other character, but if you go there, you'll be killed. And the lead character says, death is certain. It's only how and when that's at question. Mm. And I thought, if we all kind of went forward with a more positive thought that, yeah, it's this is what awaits us, but it's how we deal with today, we'd probably do a lot better.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. One of the things that Rowan Williams says in that small section of that podcast is that, yes, it may well be that we've passed the tipping point in terms of climate change, but that doesn't mean that there's not a different way of living into that future, and that if we live a life of love and reconciliation, if we, you know, that's what we have power over, that's what we can choose, how we live into that future, however tragic that future might be. And that if we also cling to the hope that Mark's talking about, who knows? Who knows what future might be possible if we embrace a lifestyle of non-anxious love and reconciliation? We don't know. Yeah. Thanks, Stuart. I'm conscious of people arriving for the meeting now, so we might wrap it up. But thank you so much for your contributions. I guess as we have finished with communion, I want to, focus on what this means for Jesus' death. And obviously Jesus' death is one more example of the violence and tragedy that is part of human life. But in Jesus' resurrection, we see this affirmation that this violence and this tragedy, whatever tragedy lies ahead of us, it's not the end. It will not stop the work of God. And it's very hard to believe that sometimes, but that is the crazy affirmation that we make in trusting in the death and resurrection of Jesus, that whatever darkness lies ahead, it's not the end of the work of God. So let's reflect on that as we eat and drink. Hopefully you've got something to eat and drink, or feel free to go and get something to eat and drink as we kind of transition to to a co-creators meeting. I guess that's my prayer for us as we reflect on Jesus' death. And I'm just also reminded of the Irenaeus. Irenaeus was a theologian from about the 4th century. He said that the glory of God is a human fully alive. And I genuinely believe that this is what Jesus is, a human fully alive, and that what Jesus comes to show us, and that this is the heart of the incarnation, and that even in his death, Jesus is showing us how to live. So let's reflect on that as we eat and drink and as we welcome people to our co-creators meeting. Welcome, everyone.